Blog Talk Radio.
Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal, A Time of Peril,
It was different back in 2010 when I published it. Times were different. I mean, things have changed considerably in 3 years. But the most important, the one thing that hasn't changed is my how I relate my world between my right and left brain, if you will. And I wrote it in my book, Chapter 16, which I was later advised should have been the first chapter in my book. but it's called Politics and Metaphysics. And I'm going to read from that. It's not a very long chapter. It's only about 4 or 5 pages. But I'd like to, this kind of explains, I tried to explain back when I wrote this book, 4 years ago, actually. I published it in March of 2010, but I wrote it between the years of about 2005 to 2009, as I was accumulating all the information, all the historical information going back to 2000, to try to span the entire political scene, political national scene. For the first decade of the millennium, and it was a very, very, very tumultuous time, if you can remember, especially in the United States. But this particular chapter explains my how I began in this business, and why. And it explains the duality of my personality, I guess, but up to now. And it might help to explain what I do so that people, why I do it, so that my listeners can get a better understanding of who I am or what I do. And I can tell you, you can now order this $35 book online. For $2.99, if you go to the front page of this website, and order from iUniverse.com, and you can get a PDF or you can put it in a Kindle format. But I would ask that anyone listening might want to buy that. That would help us out a lot here at the station, here at to keep us going. Since I began the L.A. Steel Show television program in 1999, I have been compelled to bring forward an inner voice that has been vocally restricted my entire life. It was a persistent nuisance in my day-to-day life that kept insisting that I release it. I had to write. I had to create songs. I had to paint and draw and create visual expressions. I had to voice my swelling anger at politicians, at social injustices, or whatever it was that violated some inner sense of right or wrong. Perhaps it was my search for balance and symmetry in my personal life. Whatever it was that provoked my inner voice to speak out in the past persisted even more aggressively, so that by 1999, after seeking many avenues of self-expression, I decided it was time to break out and broadcast my inner voice. I had no previous broadcasting experience, but had years of training as a public speaker and had written millions of words of unpublished writing in journals, novels, poetry, and lectures. My 20-year career as a real estate mortgage broker and real estate investor had certain elements that allowed me to establish a comfortable lifestyle for many years. However, I constantly felt unsatisfied, both professionally and personally. I was at odds with my many friends, clients, business associates regarding political and moral beliefs. So few, if any, of them had the curiosity or intensity I had for these areas of understanding, and discussing them at any length with most people was a complete exercise in futility. Throughout my professional career as a financial and real estate broker, I realized at the start that 80% of what I did was teaching people how to make well-informed decisions on the most important purchase of their lives. had to teach them how to understand the true value of certain properties they wanted to invest in, and teach them how to choose the proper vehicle for financing their real estate investment. Throughout my entire real estate and financing career, I was constantly amazed by the absolute ignorance of the majority of real estate agents regarding the basic essential knowledge required for a career in selling real estate. I was constantly training agents to understand how to qualify customers and property so not to waste time and money escorting unqualified buyers or wasting time and money listing properties that would never sell. Is this type of stupidity by the real estate industry that caused the trouble an industry is in at the present? It took me 20 years of working in the real estate industry before I realized that the true driving forces behind the industry were greed and stupidity, and I wanted no part of either. For those of you who may be in the real estate industry, forgive me for my bold statements, but God forbid, if you're any good in the business, you know the craziness of the others who aren't. And, you know, it's really frustrating. The reader may wonder why I began this last chapter discussing the real estate and finance industries. I did so to prove a point regarding two vital industries that are married to each other. It is virtually impossible to sell real estate without financing it. Politics and metaphysics are equally married. However, the metaphysical face of politics has been veiled from public view for reasons I wish to reveal in this final chapter. Few good political speeches are ever made without the invocation of feel-good spiritual messages relating to virtue, ethics, God, dignity, social evils, compassion, hope, national pride, or brotherhood and unity consciousness. These topics all relate to an invisible force of nature or divine intervention that signifies the good or evil in man by the assumption that there exists a divine providence that governs the universe. George Washington mentions this in his first inaugural address. All politicians use honesty and integrity in their campaign slogans. A politician's connection to a religion or some virtuous principle is paramount to their success in receiving a positive tone in their campaign and ultimately winning the election. The most common disappointment to voters who support them is when they find out their elected official is really a scoundrel and the worst kind of a hypocrite. Metaphysics is the study of the spiritual aspect of human existence. It is the mystery of faith, hope, and miracles. It is the foundation of all religions. It is the essence of community and family. It is love, charity, hope, happiness, sorrow, inspiration, genius, everything that mankind cannot empirically explain but knows exists. Everyone knows that there is a source of good and evil in the universe, just as they know there is life and death. Between these polarities is the ground humanity must live on. That ground is the planet Earth. Human history is archives documenting 10 millenniums of human existence. Governments, religions, heroes, legends, and the rise and fall of great civilizations are all testament to the physical and metaphysical realms humanity has existed in. The greatest tales of history revolve around the conflicts of God and man. The divine aspirations of mankind are what creates its, are what create its rises and falls. Divinity is a metaphysical term that describes God-like attributes to people and places that are beyond the explanations of science or empirical reasoning. There are countless examples of men and women claiming their divinity on earth. Divine right was the accepted understanding and rule that gave royalty its past and present status as rulers of nations. Emperors and empresses declared themselves divine, though no one could prove that they were. The royal elite are always granted their divine status by priesthoods, who were the keepers of divine essence on earth. Their power was given to them and sanctified by themselves and the leaders of their religions. King Henry VIII of England was not the first, but perhaps the most well-known ruler to usurp the authority of the priesthood and establish himself as the head of his newfound Church of England. By doing this, he was able to divorce his Catholic wife and create a precedent that is used to this day to coronate a royal head of England. King Henry VIII dispensed with the holy business of using God proxies to bestow political power to the king. He fully understood the hypocrisy of divine right. Might makes right in establishing governments and religions. Without the strength of militaries and money, no one can gain or maintain power, and no country or ruler can build an empire without the support of its people. Politics had to marry metaphysics in order to control the masses. Politicians had to harness the spiritual essence of humanity in order to motivate the emotions and intellect of the people they were to govern. Machiavelli, who wrote The Prince and The Discourse, exposed the blueprint of acquiring and maintaining political power. These techniques were varied slightly throughout history. All men, women, and children understand the basic polarity of their own existence. The forces of good and evil plague us throughout our lives. The rationalizing of these metaphysical elements is what creates our mental and physical well-being. The moral decisions we make in our daily lives keep us in or out of trouble and conflict with all of our fellow inhabitants on earth. Politics are ruled by the good or evil motivations of politicians, and politicians are granted their power by those who allow them to have it. A nation of immoral people will elect immoral leaders, and immoral leaders will rule immorally. A nation of moral people will elect moral leaders, who in turn will rule morally. It is a simple A equals B equals C formula that anyone can understand. Cause equals effect equals result. And is the fundamental principle that governs the universe. This principle applies to both the physical and spiritual planes. I have devoted much of my life to metaphysical studies. My interest has led me to many remarkable people and discoveries. I often discuss metaphysical topics on my radio programs, and I wish to acknowledge two of my friends and teachers who I have had as guests on my radio show many times. My good friend George Dixon, who passed last year in 2012, has been a noted researcher and lecturer in esoteric research is extensive in extraterrestrial discoveries, archaeological and scientific evidences of alien visitations and abductions have brought an understanding of remarkable mysteries to me and to my audience. George Dixon was a regular weekly guest on the L.A. Steel Show every Friday night on my internet program, lasteelshow.org. And our weekly discussions attracted thousands of listeners from around the world. The Friday Night with George Dixon series, soon to be available on CD, which I'm hoping will come up this year or before. I'd love to have it on by Christmas if possible. One-hour programs which discuss the Mayan calendar, the polar shift, ascension consciousness, sacred geometry, Egyptology, Montauk Project, Sumerian tablets, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, and the crystal skulls, underground civilizations, time travel, multidimensional realities, Melchizedek and the Merkaba, and much more. It is my great privilege and honor to have had George Dixon as a friend and a teacher. I made the most unique friendship of my life when I was introduced to Maria FX Algeri by another good friend, Bill Marshall. Maria is a nationally renowned psychic who has the remarkable ability to communicate with spirits who have passed over from the third dimension. I, as well as thousands of people who know Maria, have been counseled or taught by her, will attest to her remarkable gift. Maria has been a grief counselor for many years and counseled families of the 9/11 World Trade Center disaster. Maria has shared great knowledge with me as a gatekeeper to the spirit world. She has taught me to read the tarot to understand the depths of my own intuitive power. She has shared her remarkable insight with me and introduced me to the Agni Yoga. She has explained the mysteries of death and illuminated my life with the understanding of the unknown. Maria has been a guest on my program many times and has explained some of the great mysteries of the universe to my listeners. I have devoted 2 nights per week on my internet show for the last 3 years to discuss metaphysical topics. I have read on air the entire Agni Yoga series, a series of books written by ascended masters giving insight and wisdom of the infinite. I have devoted more than 50 programs reading the committing to the different books in the series. I am eternally grateful to Maria for opening my mind and heart to the wonders of the spirit world. Dear programs of Maria and the Agni Yoga readings, please visit my extensive radio archives at Blog Talk Radio, LA Steel Show.org. The metaphysical spiritual element gives meanings to politics. It gives its stature. It gives its passion and purpose. Without the spiritual aspects behind what our politicians do, there would be little interest in electing anyone to office. A machine could do the same today, could do the day-to-day work of a non-deciding, non-involved, non-spiritual, amoral bureaucrat. It is the compassion and commitment of a political figure that gives them substance and creates their charisma and the excitement around a political candidate. Successful politicians understand what their constituents want. They understand they want a leader of moral character, a leader of courage and conviction, and they will not elect anyone who does not at least pretend to have these metaphysical qualities in their public character. Lawmakers create laws, and by doing so they determine the spirit which the law is intended. Is the law compassionate, fair, punitive, or preventative? Is the law designed to save lives, save money, or preserve something for the welfare of the general public? These are all subjective and spiritual reasons for creating laws. Even the concept of law is a metaphysical concept created by politicians to impose on or protect individuals and institutions. This marriage of politics and metaphysics is the foundation of this book and the foundation of my work for the last 10 years. My need to speak truth to power led me to create the mediums for my voice and the voice of others to be heard. And that's the chapter 16 of my book, right before I go into the essays section. And one of the major things I wanted to do. I've been so tied up in so many things. I find myself unable to do them all. And I try to publish as much as I can on my website. And I'm still working on a new book. I've formatted numerous chapters, and it works, but I put a lot of them on my website, I'd like to, the most recent ones I'd like to read tonight, I've written in probably half a dozen poems and a couple and as many articles this month that I haven't read on the air. Usually I try to do that so people who don't go to my site, maybe they will. It gives a better idea of what I've been trying to accomplish. And what I used to have, I used to do four nights a week. Yeah. But I used to have an FM radio show that was on Tuesday nights, and I did that for 8 years. And I used to also do a number of documentaries and television work and so on. But I'm more or less been so involved with radio and research. And I've had a number of difficult disasters, if you will, that have come up in the last 3 years. Of course, one was the health issue that I had in 2011, but I also lost my FM radio show. The station sold out to NPR. Of course, so they didn't want my kind of views on there. And then my best friend, George Dixon, passed away this is June of last year, and it seems a lot longer now. But I've been without his influence for over a year now, and it's been difficult because George was more of a tutor for me. He was a teacher, and he inspired my shows and my and he always had some fascinating topic to talk about. And I've kind of lost track, well, not lost track, but Maria has been, who often was on my programs for those years, she's had some difficulties as well and hasn't been able to be with me on my programs. And I'm hoping one day that'll change in the near future. But for now, I've kind of lost my spiritual guides, if you will. So I've been driving or taking my journey by myself, and it's been kind of different because those great influences aren't really there anymore for me, and only basically in memory. And I want to, and so I've been delving more so into the poetic realm and artistic realms, and I've been more or less going in different directions. And I've been, as you can probably see from my website and my radio shows, but there was a poem that I wrote, and I may have read this in one of the past shows, but I think it kind of kind of tells you where I've been in the last couple of months. And I've had tremendous rage, and over many, many, many issues. But let me just, over the many political issues and personal issues. And I wanted to just talk about this one. Let me just read this poem. It's not very long, but it's called What I Hate. And starts like this. Hate for politicians is a common human trait. Patriots hate traitors, and traitors hate patriots. There is nothing real in the political game other than the death and destruction of war. There is treasure and power to be won and lost, but nothing of value to be gained. There is a point I want to make by describing what I love and hate. I love truth and hate deceit. I hate war and love peace. I cannot smile or laugh at what I hate. I cannot hug or kiss it in an embrace. I cannot look at it without contempt because it is repulsive and of evil intent. I do not turn my other cheek to wait for what I hate to strike me again. I hate what I hate with all of my heart and fight it with all of my strength. Yeah, may be strange for someone who believed in Christhood, but Christ used to get angry as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with being angry, especially in righteous rage. And I get that way. I get into these righteous rages. And, I don't know what's the way I can say. I just do. And, that's what happens to me. And I get very angry at times, and I lose my perspective on peace, love, and all that stuff, and realize that, man, But anyway, back in September, I came across this great quote by Terence McKenna. And I was first introduced to Terence McKenna by George Dixon. And for those of you who don't know, he was, he was a great thinker. And he said, "The artist's task is to save the soul of mankind. And anything less is a dithering while Rome burns. If artists cannot find a way, then the way cannot be found." And I appreciated that statement because I posted it because I agree. I've been an artist in one way or another all my life. And a poet, a writer, artist, painter, photographer. And these things are what I've always strived for. And I found to be, and I so wanted to, I've always wanted to, and even musical, I've chosen all these areas and I've tried to actually make a living at doing them, but at all of them, but I wasn't able to, I found success in all these areas, but I wasn't until I got this website and updated this new website in the last couple of years that I found a wonderful vehicle to express myself in all these ways, video and audio and art and poetry and music and everything I do. So, but I, back in September, the end of September, I wrote this poem, and it was called, and I found this beautiful cosmic picture done by the Hubble telescope. It was a NASA picture, and it was of a galaxy, and it was beautiful, hovering galaxy, and a close-up, and I posted that with the, it inspired me, because I've had this for a number of years, this picture, and I decided to post it with this poem. And it's called "The Inevitable." That's the name of the poem. "The inevitable is the anger of betrayal. A baby cries. A politician lies. Doors are open. Windows are closed. It rains in the spring and winter is cold. Love abandons hate. A stone is hard. A fire is hot. A feather is soft. Loneliness is lonely. Laughter brings joy. All die who are born. Souls transcend dimensions." And I think I've been... That's pretty much what I believe and have more or less tried to emphasize, not only in my artwork but in my poetry and in my in all of my work. And in October, we went through a period of time when, in the last month, I mean, we've gone through almost a revolutionary upheaval with the shutdown of the Congress and the government, rather, and then the coming of Obamacare, and, you know, the Syria thing with Syria that happened in back last month. And there's a whole bunch of crazy, crazy things that have been going on. Almost impossible to keep up with in a logical, I should say logical, if you do what I do and you try to report on this stuff, it's almost amazing that you can actually keep track of it. And I didn't want to change thoughts here in midstream, but there's another poem that I wrote on October 3rd. It was called Following the Wrong Dream. It's a poem about the shutdown. And these are all on my website, by the way, in October. If you go to the archives and just look at October, they'll all be there. This is the way it goes. Americans are following the wrong dream. It is not a happy dream. It is a bad dream that will lead us to ruin. The American dream is not happy anymore because it is unattainable to many more than before. It is now only attainable if you are a bankster, illegal alien, or corporate whore. Honest dreams of wealth and fame are no longer the dreams of Americans. Now Americans dream of keeping their homes and having enough food to feed their own. Let the rockets glare and bombs burst in the air. For millions of Americans, the American dream is gone. Strike up the drums, strike up the band. Give Congress and the President a big hand for shutting down the government and destroying the dreams of millions of Americans. And that I wrote on October 3rd, okay. But I've got some other poems that I wanted to read, but I'll read them later after I read this. Of course, we all know that Obamacare came around. And back on October 1st, I wrote this particular article on September 27th. It has a great graphic that goes with it, but it's very short. And I, you know, quote all of the, I quote the late statistics that came out on what the Obamacare things would cost and the prices and so on and so forth. But it dawned on me that then, that Obamacare was going to be a nightmare in hell. And as it turned out, here we are 24 days after I wrote this, or a month actually after I wrote this article, here we are in the middle of Obama hell. And the name of my article is Obama Hell Care. Yeah. I wrote it this way. It's only a couple paragraphs, but it became quite prophetic. Below is a list of what the monthly premiums for Obamacare, effective October 1st, 2013, will cost Americans. The absurdity of this program is that even with federal subsidies, anyone unemployed or employed part-time or even full-time employees making less than $15 an hour, which is $7 an hour above the current minimum wage, cannot afford health care under the plan. The arrogance, ignorance, and indifference of Obama and the suffering of the poor is proven by the cost of his health care plan. Its cost to each individual proves Obama doesn't care or doesn't know that real unemployment in the U.S. is 36%. Over 50 million Americans are on food stamps. How are people who are barely getting by or homeless and hungry going to afford the Obamacare premiums? The cruelty of pushing Americans, punishing Americans with fines who did not buy Obamacare because they cannot afford it and are already at the bottom of the income levels in the U.S., will create even greater injustice, poverty, and hardship upon them. Does Obama expect to imprison everyone who cannot afford even the most basic of premiums? Or will he have the IRS attach their meager wages or unemployment checks to pay for Obamacare? Is this why over 300 FEMA camps have been constructed throughout the country? And recent reports state they are being fully stocked and staffed to begin operation as early as October 2013. After viewing this list of premiums that follows this paragraph, I think you will rethink your position on Obamacare and his criminal care package. Yeah. And I'm going to ask you to, if you want to refer to that, these are basically the premiums for all 50 states, you know, in the three-prong program. And, it's really quite staggering, okay, the costs that people will be incurring for health insurance in this country. And that they don't already. They'll be costing much more, and it's going to be insistent that everybody pay it, even if they don't want the damn thing. And the coverage is horrible. It's a horrible package. Yeah. So, it's terrible. But anyway, let me move on. I wrote this on October 1st. It's called The Whipping of America. 800,000 federal employees have been furloughed today because our Congress cannot compromise on Obamacare. The federal WIC program, which provides food and health care to poor pregnant women and infants, has been cut as one of the non-essential programs that will be stopped today. Now, again, I wrote this on October 1st. Veterans Administration and hospital facilities, military contractors, and nonprofits depend on government grants will be shut down today. All national parks will be shut down, laying off hundreds of thousands of employees and destroying local and state economies dependent upon tourism. The estimated cost of shutdown is $10 billion a day to local and state economies. That was later changed to $64 billion a day nationally, what this shutdown cost. The madness and indifference toward the American people of our politicians to shut down our government by refusing to authorize a spending bill will cause the end of this country. We are on the precipice of an economic collapse, and now this push by both political parties to shut down the government will push the American economy over the brink into a downfall that will plunge the world economy into a full-blown depression. This is the New World Order agenda promoted by both U.S. political parties that is designed to devastate the national economy. I was so grateful that people had enough of it, had enough. The first state strike of the New World Order WIP was to rob our banks and destroy our personal retirement investment and pensions. The second strike of the WIP is our current unemployment rate continues to rise, which is now at a true rate of 36%. The third vicious strike of the WIP is the loss of 800,000 jobs effective today. The fourth strike of the WIP will be the collapse of Wall Street because Congress will not compromise on raising the debt ceiling and will allow the U.S. to default. That almost happened. That almost happened. They didn't agree to a compromise until the day of, or the day before. Once this final brutal and deadly thrashing of America happens, Americans will lose their investments to a market crash. There will be a run on all banks. Businesses will fold up across the country, and Americans will plummet into the deepest economic depression the world has ever known. Congress and Obama will continue their impasse because they are not being personally economically affected until there is no money to pay the politicians and no more money for them to steal. And the chaos will be worldwide with the collapse of governments and once there is no money to pay the politicians, the compromise will be reached, and it will be too late to save the U.S. Well, we are yet to know what the damage was. We almost lost our credit rating. We, you know, the millions of people are out of work right now, are just coming back, and they haven't been paid in 2 weeks. And God knows what small businesses and other businesses around the country have had to endure without government, without, you know, kind of highly dependent on the government, you know, for, you know, contracts and so on and so forth. I mean, and they haven't been able to get paid. They've had to furlough their own workforces. It's really, it's just, it was just inhuman what they, it was just unconscionable what these bastards did, all right? And, you know, I hope they pay for it very soon. There's got to be karma. There's got to be karma in this world, you know. There's got to be karma. But anyway, there has to be karma. I pray there's karma. I know there is karma. There's another couple statements I made last week, poems rather that I wrote, and I'd like to read those to you, if you don't mind. Oh, yes, let's see. On October 11th, the Nobel Peace Prize was handed out, and my choice and my nominee was Malala Yousafzai, the poor girl who got shot in the head by the Taliban, right, and lived to say, and healthy. She's healthy and well, but she was nominated for the World Prize, and she didn't receive it. But I wrote this that day when it was announced, and that was on the 14th, I believe, of October. No, the 11th. Sorry, the 11th of October. And it goes this way. Once again, the Nobel Committee has dishonored the concept of world peace by ignoring the individual courage of the world's most worthy Peace Prize nominee. No longer does the Nobel Peace Prize honor individual achievements for the advancement of peace and humanity. It ignores failed institutions, and it honors, rather, failed institutions, warmongering presidents, and chemical weapons removal services. What a complete farce the Nobel Committee is and the Nobel Peace Prize has become. For those of you who don't know, the Nobel Prize went to chemical weapons removal service that removed what the chemical that you know did the investigation in Syria on the chemical weapons. What a joke, right? A young girl showed more courage and commitment to freedom than the entire assembly of countries in the UN by her standing against the most brutal terrorists of the 21st century. She was shot by the Taliban for refusing to obey the Islamic fundamentalist insanity of not educating Muslim women. No greater message could have been sent to the free world, to terrorists and oppressive nations, than to honor Malala Yousafzai, rather, with the Nobel Peace Prize. Malala has inspired millions of people around the planet and with her courage and commitment to peace, freedom, and justice. The Nobel Committee has always insulted everyone in the world who believes in peace, justice, and freedom. They have ignored the greatest symbol of individual courage and commitment in the 21st century that could serve to end the control of Islamic terrorism in the Middle East. Malala Yousafzai, her one act of courage, courageous defiance against the Taliban, has proven to the world the cowardice and incompetence of the world leaders and the barbarism and insanity of the Islamic fundamentalists. By the Nobel Peace Prize Committee ignoring Malala's nomination, they have proven their support of oppressive governments and terrorism and the true allegiance of the world elitists they represent. Malala's defiant spirit and great courage and worldwide support has shamed the Nobel Committee and has made their judgment look as insane as the terrorists who shot her. The Nobel Committee's decision was brought about by their fear that granting Malala the Peace Prize would further inflame the revolutionary spirit currently uniting humanity against the elitists and the New World Order they represent, who are rapidly losing their control of every nation in the world. So much for the Peace Prize, huh? I've got, I have two other poems for you that I wanted to read before we end tonight. And I have some stunning graphics as well, if you go to my site and see them. This poem I wrote on the 14th of October, and about a week ago now, or 10 days ago. It was called Departing at Dawn. And you know, it's funny how I date these, but man, I can't, it's almost impossible for me to believe how fast time goes. You know, just 10 days ago I wrote this, and it seems like I just wrote it yesterday. But it's called Departing at Dawn. All eyes are on the dawn as that departing ship sets sail. A new journey for everyone on the infinite ocean. All the lost and oppressed people who wonder where they should go, this vessel sets sail at dawn to travel to a new world. Here on deck I greet you as you wonder where we are going. The sea is calm and we are ready to journey to our new home. We cast all heavy baggage overboard and begin our journey light and free to sail the seas as a new people on this vessel of humanity. Yes, and that's called Departing at Dawn. I get this beautiful picture I was able to enhance, stock picture of an old tall ship that was headed out to the ocean. And and my next is was also inspired by a tall ship tied to a dock. And that's the name of it, Tall Ship Tied to a Dock. A tall ship tied to a dock is ready to go to sea, but is not free. Held back and restrained to prevent it from drifting by a weak rope of resistance. Vulnerable to strong winds that dash it against the dock until the winds stop. A giant of shipbuilder's ingenuity and leviathan of the sea, tied down by a paper authority. A great ship of commerce and pride, made obsolete by the power of steam, and became a non-profit museum. Yes, a beautiful ship. We have the USS Constitution and so many other ships that were, you know, dry docked and taken out of commission because of technology, you know, basically. And kind of like we are. We grow old and lose our technology as well. Huh? And I'm going to leave you with this this last poem tonight and possibly one other statement. A broken heart. A heart can break forever or may not break at all. A heart can break from grief or from betrayal. A heart can break from hate. A heart can break from pain. The pain can be forgotten or remembered in a frame. And before I leave it tonight, I've got one more that I wanted to talk to you about tonight. And it's called The Shutdown. The Showdown is Shutdown. The Showdown is finally shut down. I'm surprised that Republicans still don't get it. This is the second time in the past year they tried to stop the debt ceiling from being raised and their bluff failed. This is the second time in 17 years the government has been shut down. The brinksmanship of this Congress and President have needlessly cost the American people greatly. Unless a third-party candidate is well-funded and is not censored by the media, the American people have no other choice than to vote for these miserable candidates of the old two-party system. They can also not vote at all and march on Washington by tens of millions to take over the government and throw out the entire Congress, President, and Supreme Court, and start a new government. But that would cause a shutdown of the present government unless a well-planned and worthy transition government was ready to take over. The smugness of our traitorous representatives must be turned into fear of the millions of people they are elected to represent. The smugness of Obama and his cronies in the House and Senate must be replaced by fear of the people they are ignoring. Big money donations in the mainstream media must be strongly regulated in all elections, and candidates must be restricted to equal media time, and a spending ceiling on all national, state, and local political campaigns must be strictly enforced. With these basic restrictions imposed on politicians by law, many of the political ills we have seen this year and in the past would be averted, and the American politics and government would be stronger for the benefit of the American people, not for the benefit of those few who so poorly govern them. For all who have suffered these last 16 days of the government shutdown, I hope they will recover their lost wages and regain their normal lives. I feel concerned for those who have permanently lost or temporarily lost their necessary government assistance for the basics of living. Perhaps now others who in many different ways depend financially on government can understand the plight of the homeless and poor in this country and never allow a shutdown of the government to happen again. Let this 16-day shutdown of the federal government serve as a reminder for Americans to never allow a small, insane, and cruel minority of elected officials to terrorize the vast majority of Americans by a stupid and irresponsible bluff. This is how tyrannies are created. This is how the collapse of countries and empires happen. This is how dictators rise to power. And on that tone, folks, I'm going to leave you tonight. And I thank you for joining me. And please do us a favor and go to my website and check out everything I've read here tonight. And please, if you can afford it, buy my book. Do me a favor, buy my book at $2.99 for the e-book. 365 pages of tremendous reading, I guarantee it. And, help us out here. But help yourself out. And I want to thank everyone again for enjoying the show and tell your friends about it. And folks, I wish you a pleasant evening. Good night, pal. Join me again next Tuesday with Lila.